Okay, I want to welcome all of you. We have a couple of new people here today, and so for your benefit, let me give you a sense of what we're doing. There is a website up on the board at the very top where recordings of the lessons are placed so that you can find access to things we've done before if you want to get a sense of how we got to today. But we're going through the Bible a little bit at a time. Last week we made it through 1 Kings 13. So I'd like you to turn to 1 Kings 14. As you turn there, let me remind you of the arch that we're following. Saul became king. He did not do things as God had ordered him to, as God had asked him to do. The kingdom was taken from him and given to David, who was described as a man after God's own heart. This was not a man who was perfect, but it was a man who functioned in a way that God could honor and work with. On David's death, with some what you might call palace intrigue, Solomon became king. And then on Solomon's death, Rehoboam became king. Hal said just before we started, he's really working at trying to figure out how to keep Rehoboam and Jeroboam straight. So you all keep working on that too. Jeroboam was a person who was in charge of some of the slave labor that had been functioning under Solomon. God's prophet had gone to him and told him that the part of the kingdom was being taken away from Solomon's successor, almost all of it, in fact, and that was going to be given to him. And one of the most amazing promises that the Bible has ever made was made to Jeroboam. The promise was, if you will do what I've asked you to do, if you follow my ways, I'll make you a kingdom and a dynasty as everlasting and as significant as David's. When Rehoboam became king, Jeroboam came back from exile in Egypt, and the kingdom did indeed split. That's what we saw last week. And the outcome of that was that the northern portion, the 10 tribes in the north, have named Jeroboam as king. The problem was that almost immediately Jeroboam violated everything God had said. And so the promise that God had made could not come true because it was conditioned on Jeroboam functioning properly. So we come now to chapter 14. And in chapter 14, we begin the process that will now go through the rest of 1 Kings into and through the rest of 2 Kings. All of this is paralleled in 2 Chronicles. We're going to go through what we will call the kingdom period. This is where the two divided parts of the nation are led by different kings, and you see the interaction between them, the interaction between them and God's messengers, his prophets. That's going to consume us now for the next little while. Chapter 14 begins with Jeroboam having a problem. What's the problem he had? His son is sick. And apparently his son was sick enough that Jeroboam is really worried about whether he's going to survive. How many other sons did Jeroboam have? Starts with W.
We don't know.
We don't know, but he had one. How many sons did Solomon have? Starts with W. We don't know, but the only one we do know about is Rehoboam. Maybe Jeroboam was in that same position. In any event, the son was sick. And Jeroboam says to his wife, who is not named here, well, what does he say? It's fascinating. You've read this, right? Disguise yourself and go to the prophet at Shiloh. Shiloh is in the northern kingdom, but not too far in the northern kingdom. It's a bit north of Jerusalem in the southern part of what we would identify as the northern kingdom. Disguise yourself and go to the prophet. The prophet is the same prophet who had come to Jeroboam. The same prophet who said, God is making this powerful promise to you if you will only follow and obey. So why does she have to disguise herself? Maybe because he's messed up and he knows it. Don't know. Go to him, take 10 loaves and some savory food. Does yours say savory? Isn't that a great word?
Cakes.
And a jar of honey. Everything's better with a little honey on it. He will tell you what will happen to the child. And Jeroboam's wife did this. Tells you in verse 5 that the prophet Ahijah could not see very well. My translation says his eyes were fixed with age. Age does have a way of fixing things, but not necessarily in a good way. But the Lord had told him, Jeroboam's wife is coming to you. This is what she's going to ask. And then he said, this is what you're supposed to say. Now, in a nutshell, what does he say to her? Your son is going to die. For what reason? Because you've messed up. And then he says something that's rather astounding. And I want to inch up on this just in case you missed it. Just in case you missed it, I want to inch up on this. Verse 10. Verse 9 says, you've done more evil than all of your predecessors. Verse 10 says, for this reason I will bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. And my translation has a word here that I need to know what your translation says at this spot.
Evil.
I'm still in verse 10. I will wipe out every man jack of the family of Jeroboam. What does yours say at that spot? Yours just says to the last man. Cut off. Mine says man jack, and I've looked that up, and I still don't know what I found. It's a way of expressing this. I do have a footnote that says what it really means, and I don't want to share that footnote with you. If your translation has that footnote, don't share it. But you've seen a footnote, is that right? Good footnote, isn't it? It's a good footnote, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, that's apparently what man jack means. Yeah, I'm not going to go any further with that one this morning. It's a little too good. Anyway, I'm going to wipe out every man-jack of the family of Jeroboam, fettered or free. What does yours say at that spot?
Slave
or free. The implication is, remember, he was coming from Ephraim, and he was in charge of all the forced labor, the, if you will, almost slavery of that group. There were people who were enslaved in his wider family. All of them are going to be gone. It really gets gross in here. I'm going to sweep away the house of Jeroboam as a man sweeps away dung until none is left. We had a chance one time, a very long time ago, to spend 3 weeks in Kenya. And the last 3 days that we were there, we went into the Maasai Mara, some of you know this, and we had a chance on one day for a few hours to go into a Maasai village. Some of you have been in places like that. 20 or 30 huts around the outside, and the inside, well, what was the inside? Mud and dung all built up. Why? Because at night, because of the lions, they would bring the cattle into the middle of this village, and cattle would spend the night there. Okay. When we finished with that trip, at the advice of the people we were staying with, we took our shoes and put them in plastic bags. Put those in another plastic bag. Put those in a third plastic bag. We flew into Detroit. We're met by people from the agriculture department. And they said, where have you been? And we said, we've been inside a Maasai village in the Maasai Mara in Kenya. And you could just see their faces fall. And then we said, and the shoes we wore, we put into a plastic bag and put that into another. They just lit up. Oh, thank goodness. They took our shoes away for 45 minutes and cleaned them. They were the cleanest shoes we've ever had. Okay. I'm going to sweep them away as a man sweeps away dung. And then he says in verse 11, those of his family who die in the city, the dogs will eat. Those who die in the country, the birds will eat. Now that's the one I want to make sure you know what it's saying. He tells you later, but he's actually telling you here. Can you understand what that means? It's rather amazing if you think about it. It says none of them are going to have a proper burial. That's what it says. A proper burial would prevent that. Not a one is going to have a proper burial. No respect to the life that they lived. They're just going to be corpses in the street or corpses in a field. This is horrible. Get up and go home, verse 12 says. The moment your feet enter the town, the child will die. Verse 13, all of Israel will mourn for him. Watch how this circles back to verse 11. All of Israel will mourn for him and bury him. And he alone of Jeroboam's family will have a proper burial. And then it adds something that I don't understand. What does it say?
There's something pleasing.
There's something in him that pleases me, and he's the only one in that family that I see that in. So why did he have to die? There's a tiny, tiny, tiny little foreshadowing of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in that sentence. There's a little, tiny foreshadowing. Because otherwise it makes no sense at all. How come you kill off the one in which some good was seen? I don't know. And then he says in verse 14, the Lord will set a king over Israel who will put an end to the house of Jeroboam. The Lord will make Israel shake until it quavers like a reed in the water. Will uproot Israel from this prosperous land and scatter them beyond the river for provoking the Lord to anger. By what? Yours says making idols? Mine doesn't. Making sacred poles, making Asherah poles. What's that? We're going to have to talk about that. We're going to have to talk about that. He will abandon Israel for the sins which Jeroboam has committed and has made Israel commit. A king will be set over Israel who will put an end to the house of Jeroboam. That's one promise. The Lord will make Israel shake. He will uproot Israel from this prosperous land. That's a different promise. That's not the same thing. There's going to be a king coming who's going to kill off all of Jeroboam's family, all of his heirs, all of his possible descendants. And separately, Israel is going to be conquered by a foreign country and taken off into exile, because that river they're talking about is probably the Euphrates or the Tigris or both. That is quite an answer to the question, my child is sick, what's going to happen? Do you hear the power of that? And what do you read in verse 19? What you read in 19 is, that's it. That's all you hear about Jeroboam. He does apparently have a son left. Who's his son?
Nadab.
Verse 21, what does it say? I thought that had already happened. I thought that had already happened. Hadn't Rehoboam already become king? What's this? This is what I want you to get used to for the remainder of 1 Kings and all of 2 Kings. This is what I said a few moments ago. You are in a portion that we call the period of the kings. And you're going to go like a ping pong ball back and forth between what's happening in Judah and its kings and what's happening in the northern kingdom, which is called Israel, and its kings. So far, okay? Now, I don't know. I haven't checked yet. I read a commentator who said this, and I haven't checked to see if it's true, but it's true almost as far as I've looked. When you talk about the kings of Judah, which is that? That's the southern kingdom. That's the one tribe or the tribe plus remnants of a couple of other tribes left to David's family, right? When you look at those, it always names the next king and that king's mama. The mother of the king is listed. The commentator said every single time. I haven't checked that yet, but I did check out about 6 or 7 places, and it's true that far. Okay? Doesn't do this over in Israel. Does this over here in Judah. What was our first question we're going to have to come back to? What were those poles? Sacred poles, Asherah poles. What was that all about? We're going to have to come back to that. Here's the second thing we're going to have to come back. Why are they always telling you about mama? What's this with the mother? And it turns out the clue comes really early. The clue comes really early. We're going to get that today, I hope. Doing okay so far? So now we're talking about Rehoboam. So they're setting the stage. We already talked about Rehoboam. Now we're going to talk about him again. Okay? What happens in verse 21? We start talking about Rehoboam. What happens in verse 31? We finished talking about Rehoboam. That was easy. Let's just make sure everybody gets that. What happens in verse 21? We start talking about Rehoboam. Verse 31, we finish talking about Rehoboam. And now we're ready to talk about, look in verse 31, Abijam or Abijam. Mine's got an M at the end of it. Yours got an H? Really? Because Abijah was the prophet, and mine says Abijam, A-B-I-G-I-J-A-M, but we're okay with different words and different translations for this. That happens. Okay? Now, look at the first verse of 15. I'm only orienting you. I'm only orienting you. First verse of chapter 15, who is it talking about? It is not talking about Jeroboam. What's it talking about? The reign of Abijam in Judah against the background of Jeroboam was king over in Israel. So almost every time a new king is named, it'll say, when so-and-so was king in Judah, such-and-such became king in Israel. Or, when such-and-such was king in Israel, so-and-so became king in Judah. That's the sort of ping-pong ball going back and forth. All right? Now, I want you to come down to verse 22. Verse 21 tells you Rehoboam became king. How old was he when he became king? 41. How old is Prince Charles? Oh, let's not go there, but we can think about that. 41 years old, right? How long did he reign? 17 years. I'm still in verse 21. What's his mama's name? Naamah, the Ammonite. Uh-oh. Huh. That's one of those foreign alliance marriages probably for that one, right? Now, verse 22 is what I want to take you to. What does it say about Rehoboam in verse 22? What does it say in verse 22 about Rehoboam? The judgment of God is presented by the historian. The one who's writing the history is telling us God's judgment about Rehoboam. What is that judgment? I'm at verse 22 of chapter 14. You are silent. Let's see if we can fix one of those two. He did what is, mine says, displeasing to the Lord. Yours said he did what is evil.
Mine says Judah did what was evil. Not the king. Judah.
I have a footnote that says the Greek has all the verbs in singular, as if this is talking about Rehoboam. And the Hebrew versions that we have are all the verbs are plural, as if it's talking about Judah, and the translators don't know which way to read it. I'm reading it as singular, and I'm reading it as applying to Rehoboam, because if you follow the track all the way to the end of 2 Kings, you will see this. There is a judgment about the king. Now, time out for a minute. Let's just be fair with this. The king can't do anything on his own. He has to somehow persuade the people to come along with him. The people don't do anything on their own. They do something as they're led.
He uses the plural pronoun they.
That's in English. That's not in Greek and Hebrew.
Well, sorry.
As I'm saying, the translators, as they go, the translators go back as far as they can. They find singular verbs in the old Greek, and they find plural. Okay. Everybody all right? The judgment of history falls both on the king and on the people that the king led. I had a conversation with a person in the upper administration at the University of Richmond on Friday. I complained about something. She took her finger, put it in my chest, and said, "You're the one that's got to do something about this." There are middle-level administrators I'm not high enough to control. If you think something needs to be done, you're the one that needs to do it. Well, it turns out I am trying. I'm not successful yet. But boy, am I persistent. And I won't tell you what the issue was. I'll just tell you, there is an interesting thing. History judges the individuals who lead, and history judges the people who were led. And I can find, I think, as many places as you can find to apply that idea. There comes a point where people have to say, wait a minute. Let's do something different. Do I need to get out my sign to make my point? I believe this is a judgment about Rehoboam. Hal, look at that. Right? I believe this is a judgment about Rehoboam. I believe it's also a judgment about the kingdom that he led. I believe it's a judgment about both. I'm applying it today to the king because of what I want to do for you. What's the judgment about this king? What was the judgment about Solomon? Careful. What's the judgment about Solomon? Did he some what?
Not at the beginning.
Good. So what's the judgment?
He was married to more women.
Partly pleased the Lord. What's the judgment about Rehoboam? He displeased the Lord. What's the judgment about Solomon? He partly pleased the Lord. John says, What's the judgment about David? He pleased the Lord. Okay? Now, in the interest of time, Bob Wilbur says that you're supposed to leave at 10:30 to go upstairs. I know that's not so. 8 of you have told me that's not so. You have to be upstairs, and some of you get lost on the way, they tell me. So we have to stop early. Okay? But I think I don't have enough time to show you 5 or 10 examples of this. But as you read through the rest of 1 Kings and all of 2 Kings, the judgment of God is quoted by the historian over and over and over again. Okay? How long did this guy reign, Rehoboam? 17 years. Who succeeded him?
His son, Abijah.
Abijam, or whatever you want to call him. Abijama Slama. Became king. How long did he reign?
3 years.
3 years. What was Mama's name? This is Judah, so Mama's name should be there. Right? What's the judgment of the Lord?
He committed all the sins of prophecy.
His heart was not holy with the Lord his God, as the heart of David had been. Okay. So, what's the judgment? You got 3 positions. He pleased God? I don't think so. Does it sound like he partially pleased God? Doesn't sound like it. This is this. So, what I'm going to do... I want to put a capital T if they pleased God. I'm going to put a squiggle, that's known as a tilde, if they hold your hand up, partly pleased God. And I'm going to put a lowercase d if they displeased God. Okay?
That's the new Greek.
Would you give one of these to everybody who wants one? Would you help me? Would you give one of these to everybody who wants one? Tommy, can you give a few back in this corner? Rita, can you give a few back in this? I've heard a couple say, I want my own. I want to put notes on mine.
We didn't get the we didn't get the Beacon.
Okay, settle down. Passing out a handout does not give you permission to just talk unfocusedly. We have to talk together. Okay. Page 1. Everybody got one? Way back in the back? Rita, way back in the back.
Anybody got it? Is there one?
we done?
Yep.
Are we settled back down now? Short history lesson. Page 1, top of the page, left-hand corner, Christianity 102, class notes. When Jim Pardew was pastor here, he decided that people needed to know more about the Bible and more about faith. He designed a curriculum that had four courses in it. Christianity 101, 102, 103, 104. I taught Christianity 102. This is out of that section. It's out of that course. Maybe someday I'll teach that course again. I've got notes from Christianity 102, 104, and I sat through Christianity 101. Did any of you sit through those courses? You missed something. You sat through some of them. Yeah, I remember. Okay. Now, on the first page, the first three kings of Israel were Saul, David, and Solomon. Would you please look at Saul's name in the little table down at the bottom? There is a superscript on the right side of Saul's name. What is it?
D.
A lowercase d. What does that tell you? If you go into the Bible and look for the judgment of God as related by the historian, what will you learn? He displeased God. Now, yours said he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and that's different translations. We use different words. I'm using this translation. How about David?
Please God.
How about Solomon? Partially please God. How about Rehoboam? Okay, time out. Yes, sir.
You just going to say, though, with David, couldn't you very well put a D right in front of David and then a D at the end, because he very much displeased God, and he paid a high price for his children and everything else because of it. He was part of his wife too. But then the final result was he pleased God.
I have a cartoon that used to be on the wall of my office. I was told I had to take down a giant poster. I had to take down two giant posters. One giant poster shows this big, ugly guy with a giant club. And standing in front in a beam of light was this young little boy. And the title at the top was Freshman Advising. They told me I had to take that down. I couldn't leave that up. There was a cartoon that I had up, and it showed Charlie Brown talking to Linus. And the question is, when we die and go to heaven, are we graded on a curve or are we graded pass-fail? What's the answer to that question? Both. Romans says there are some people who are going to be saved as if they were saved from a fire. Pass-fail is the number one question. That is the question that answers everything. Once that's answered, everything else is, how you doing? And what has our pastor preached on for the last 7 weeks? You can do better. You can do better. Job said, and his friends called him on it, I have not sinned. Can you say that? Sorry, he said, I have no sin. I have no sin. Can you say that?
No.
Why could Job say that? Because his sin had been forgiven, all of it, every bit of it, at the foot of the cross. And so has yours. Did David please God? Yes, he did. Was he perfect in how he pleased God? Absolutely not. Did he pay consequences for what he did? You bet he did. Big ones that the world would have been better off if he hadn't had those consequences. But did he please God? Yes. And that's the paradox of David. This is a man after my... This is a man whose heart I can work with. This is a man who, when he messes up, and he did mess up, and he messed up so badly that messing up is an understatement. He came back to me instead of running from me. And that's the best answer I can give.
Right, and also, Saul was not chosen so much by God, but David was. So I think that
chosen more by the people for the...
Even though he went in sin, it gave him a big plus because God was behind him.
Right. Saul. Can you turn this over to the second page? Who's the first one on this page?
Abijah.
What's the judgment? Displeased God. What's the title at the top of the column?
King of Judah.
Kings of Judah, right?
Yes.
Down the left-hand side, who's the last one?
Zedekiah.
And what happens during his time in that second column, the comments column? Jerusalem falls, the temple is destroyed, and everybody is taken away to Babylon. Except a little remnant. What's the third column?
Kings of Israel.
Kings of Israel. What's the last column? Comments on those kings. So I probably should have a very dark line down the middle of the page. Everybody okay?
Yes.
This is the ping pong ball. It's going back and forth between these two. Back and forth between these two. All right? Would you please look at Asa? That's the second one after Rehoboam.
Yes.
Roughly, when did he become king? 911 BC, so you got to count down. How long was he king? Can you do the math? All you got to do is put a minus sign and subtract. 41 years. It's the judgment of the commentators as to the date that I put on here. But it's the Bible that says 41 years. Everybody okay? Now, it says he was king from 911 to 870. How about over on the right-hand side? Jeroboam became king in 931, it says, which I guess is right. When does Nadab become king? 910. How about Baasha or Baasha? 909. How about Elah? 886. How about Zimri? 885. Who's been king of Judah all this time? Asa. So you see, while Asa was king of Judah, in the so-and-so year of Asa was king of Judah, the so-and-so became king of Israel, and here's what happened. Okay. What was the year for Zimri? 885. What was the year for Omri? 885. How long was Zimri king? 7 days. 7 days. Now, what I'm trying to do is summarize this for you. So what I'd like you to do is just take a moment and look at this and see if we can get one piece of information out of this. Would you please look down the left-hand column, Kings of Judah. How many do you find that the judgment of the historian is that they pleased God? Name them as you see them. Asa, Hezekiah, Josiah. How many partly pleased God? Four of them right there in the middle. Maybe another one somewhere. Jehoshaphat way back up there. Okay? Well, go down the right-hand side. How many pleased God? How many partly pleased God? That's what I want you to see. That's what I want you to see. Do you have to be perfect to please God? What do you have to be? Responsive.
Now, does the D plus mean that
they really displeased? No, the D plus means there was a little bit of positive that you could say. I think in the comments I put not quite as bad.
Oh yeah.
There's the old story. A preacher was approached by a gangster whose brother had died, and the preacher was told, either you can be murdered or you can go into a funeral service and say that my brother was a good man. The preacher thought about it and he said, okay. And he got to the funeral service and he got in there and he said, this man was a despicable snake. He killed people, he stole, he did terrible, terrible things. He went on and on with this long list. And then he said, but compared to his brother, he's a good man. That's the D plus. That's the D plus. Okay? It's time for the golden notes to go. I do not feel that I have reached a conclusion of any kind, but I believe I have set you up to read the rest of 1 and 2 Kings and in parallel to read 2 Chronicles, and we'll come back and try to start at this place next time. Are you okay with that? 1 and 2 Kings, all of that, and alongside of that, 2 Chronicles, because 2 Chronicles overlays a lot of this. Let's have a... Pardon? Not till next time. We don't have time. I can't tell you about the Germans or the Poles. And I heard somebody say the Germans have nothing to do with this because somebody said Germain.
Can you repeat what you said? You don't have to please God, but you have to be responsive.
No. I said, what is it that pleases God? Do you have to be perfect?
Oh.
You have to be without sin. The answer is yes, but that doesn't mean you never sin. It is your sins have been forgiven and dealt with, and you're responsive to what God is calling on. Okay? Let's have a word of prayer as they go. Our Father, we do thank you for this time, and I pray that this morning something of what I have said will help these good people begin to understand
what was happening, because the book of Hebrews tells us everything that happened all the way back here was as an example for us to understand deeper truths about what happened in the lives of these people. Help us recognize if we see something that was a problem in them, we probably need to look in the mirror, because there's a good chance we'll see it in ourselves or in our society. And I pray all of this in your son's name. Amen.
Thank you.